What's going on, everyone? It's me again. Just wanted to drop you a reminder that this is part two of our pitching conversation about the bullpen. If you're looking for part one, you'll find that in the last episode. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't. All right, I'm done talking. Here's part two.
And we're back. All right, so now we are going to talk about my personal favorite part. I don't know why I love the bullpen so much. I love standing out at Safeco and joking around with the guys in the pen. You know, I love that they can be loose for the first part of the game and then just totally locked in. I would love to be a bullpen pitcher. If I was in baseball, that is the job. I would like to be the loogie because I could do that with my left hand. And I think we've got a pretty fun selection of guys who are pretty much locks, and then a lot of interesting candidates to talk about. So let's start off with talking about the closer, obviously. Talk about, I almost called him Electric Eddie D. Someone killed me.
Oh, no, you didn't. No.
I really am not having my best moment.
You're gonna catch some internet hands.
I'm gonna catch some Jose hands, because I think Jose hates that. I think Jose hates that nickname more than any of the rest of us.
Absolutely. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Why do you hate it so much?
It's just, I mean, it's not because Sims came up with it. I know a lot of people don't like it because of that, but it's just really boring and generic.
Yeah.
It's just easy. He probably just came up with it on the top of his head.
I think it's annoying because he came with a nickname. He's got a nickname. He's Sugar. Yeah. He wants Sugar. To be Sugar. Yeah. Why can't we just call him Sugar?
That's right.
He hashtags it on every tweet, on every Instagram post.
He literally does do that. And his friends call him that back in the... You know, what's really cool to see about Diaz, and this is off topic a little bit, but just how much his city loves him and how much Puerto Rico loves him and how proud they are of him. And I know, Jose, this is close to your heart.
Yeah. That's exactly why I have a big love for him, because we're very proud people. We love our baseball players. So the fact that he was able to come up on my favorite team, being from Puerto Rico, it's a pretty big deal, especially for the fact that, well, until recently, Puerto Rico has kind of fallen off the map for baseball players compared to the heyday back in the late 90s and the early 2000s. So it was just nice to see him come through and really light it up. Okay. He was electric. and he really injected some energy into the team and to the fan base as well. So it was just very, very cool to see. Very cool.
Let's talk about the actual pitching part of it, though. So I believe that Steamer has him for less WAR than he put up this year. Which is confusing to me because I would think he would only get better. But I don't have the exact numbers in front of me anymore, but I think it was 1.9 versus 1.7 or something that.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. do we think that's fair or accurate? What are you expecting from him next season?
I think it's their projections certainly, I think, take into account that he, after having it, extraordinary, strikeout rate all the way up through the minors, suddenly was striking out four more people than he'd ever struck out in his life, essentially, and for a while was on essentially a historic pace. I believe he was hovering around 20 K per nine for a while, which, in that first stretch when he first came up. His style of pitching, which involves essentially two pitches, which is completely fine if you're a closer and you have two really good pitches, is totally fine. The high velocity fastball and the extremely devastating slider that is about 12 miles per hour slower.
It's unfair.
Yeah, it's comical. It's essentially his pitches in terms of their speed are Fernando Rodney's, but if Fernando Rodney actually had a clue about where it was going. it's Fernando Rodney threw 96-97 with a two-seam movement and a changeup that just fell to the ground. Edwin Diaz does that, but a slider that dives away from righties, and even if he misses, it's usually going to be enough. I remember when he was pitching, you know, I think in that Cubs series, he threw three pitches right down the middle to Dexter Fowler, and Dexter Fowler swung and missed all of them.
That was so great.
So he has the room. He has room for error. And if he continues living with that room for error that we occasionally saw him get into trouble with last year, he may be around what they're projecting. But if he does improve and does increase that accuracy and that precision, he's one of the best relief pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, I agree. I thought last year when he got into those situations where he was struggling, I thought it was interesting to see him turn to his slider more often. Absolutely. than his fastball. It shows a lot of confidence in that pitch, and I think that goes a long way. And I think last year he was also dealing with some fatigue as well. I mean, yeah, he's sure. up there with 90 innings for the season, and I mean, he was a starter in the minors for his earlier in his career, but yeah. I think he was still tired, and I think we saw that a lot.
And that's what Stottlemyre had said that on the Hot Cell podcast a couple weeks ago, that he got really tired towards the end of the year, and he didn't tell anybody. Like, prideful.
Pride.
Yeah, really prideful guy, and yeah. That affected him. I mean, and he still wasn't that bad, but his control or command wasn't where it was when he first showed up.
I mean, imagine right. going from wiping out AA guys who have never seen anything like you, to having to go up against Mike Trout, and you know, that's a pretty steep jump.
Yeah, and his other issue, well, not his issue, but with last year, the issue was, in addition to, you know, that he wouldn't say that he was tired, which is not an uncommon thing for a baseball player or a professional athlete, mm-hmm. but it's not like we had anyone else that we could go to. And I think...
Oh, yeah, we were not going back to Cishek.
Right, you know, so I like Steve Cishek. I think he's a good player. I mean, we all do, but I think we really were in a place, especially, you know, when Altavilla was not yet fully being trusted, and mm-hmm. When Cishek was sort of still working his way back, where it was, well, we have a bunch of starters that can't get deep into games, and we have an incredible fire breather at the end of the bullpen, and nothing in between. And so our team was almost as poorly constructed as you could design it. You know, you can have a bunch of acceptable starting pitchers that are innings eaters if you're there always just funneling towards this sort of dragon's den at the end. You know, you saw that was what the Orioles had last year, where they had...
Right, or the Royals in 2015.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Where, you know, you can get by with mediocrity as long as you have these aces at the end. And that's where, you know, I'm not in love with closer roles. I advocate for a all-reliever, pitching staff. But you can get by with that, and that's, I think, what essentially DePoto and the Mariners have decided they're going to do, or what is most reasonable for them to do, and it's really exciting and interesting to see that gamble.
There was a lot of talk in the off season, and I think it was just idle chatter. Like, Jerry hadn't made a trade for like 3 days and we were bored. But, you know, we saw these insane prices being fetched for closers. Such a hot market for closers. And there was a little bit of talk that cropped up here and there about trading Diaz. Has that ever appealed to any of the three of you? And do you think that the team would have been well served by it?
I certainly thought about it. I don't know where you guys fall on the spectrum. I think it would have been a very reasonable thing to do. You had him maybe certainly not necessarily at the peak of his value, but at what could be the peak of his value with tons of club control and all of this potential, and with how much money you saw Jensen getting and you saw Chapman and all of these elite relievers getting, the return could have been sizable.
Yeah, we saw this with Carson Smith, right? Jerry traded Carson Smith at the height of his value. And the return wasn't that great, though, right?
That's true.
Like, Wade Miley was, I mean, he looked good on paper, and he was cheap, but it just never worked out. And
he also came with the recently DFA Jonathan Aro, who also was not very good.
Rest in peace.
All right, Jonathan Aro.
Jose, what did you ever think about trading Edwin?
Yes and no. Kind of like I mentioned earlier, I really like the guy personally, so I would not want to see him get traded, but it makes sense, you know, especially like you said, the market was so high on relief pitching this offseason. They'd be remiss not to look at that and consider it to see what kind of return they would get. So I get it. If they did it, I would be disappointed, but I would totally get why they did it.
But I think if they did trade him, I think we'd have to get some win now players back. And I don't think that's where the market was.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I'm glad that we kept him. I think he's a great, great piece on our team. I think he's going to be an excellent closer. And so, yeah, I think it all worked out in the end.
And that kind of goes to what Jerry actually said today during the media luncheon, was all the trades that they made this offseason was major league players for major league players, or minor league players for minor league players.
Yeah.
Because they are in that win now mindset.
Yeah. But also, so he is really focused on not giving up that youth core. And I mean, this might transition into talking a little bit about someone else in the bullpen, but I was convinced that we were going to trade Dan Altavilla, first of all, because he is my favorite, and Jerry has a history of trading my favorites and breaking my heart. But also, I thought, you know, here's a guy who hasn't shown anything much yet. He's right-handed, and our pen desperately needs lefties. You know, I didn't really see us getting through the season and not trading him. Similarly, I think we kicked around the idea of Tyler O'Neill in trades a bunch of times. You know, he talked about the height of his value. I don't know that there's anything more he could have done in what he did in the Southern League and what he did in the AFL to just really, his star is at such a rise. You almost wonder if it'd ever be higher before he actually steps on the major league field. So, but he didn't trade him either. So it definitely seems like Jerry is committed to building and developing a youth core that will serve us for many years.
Yeah, this is kind of a tangent, but I remember seeing Jerry talk about how he's always building a winner. He's always in win now mode, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we think about the cliff that this team's on with Cano and Cruz and Felix getting up there in age, and what Jerry's really trying to do is building the sustainable club that has a youth core that's moving up as the veterans are moving out, right? And so he's that takes a lot of work to cultivate that kind of a team, and it involves keeping players like Altavilla or O'Neill or Diaz and not trading them away to sell out for 1 year.
Well, the other reason I did not want to trade Edwin Diaz was I am not ready to go back to the Steve Cishek closer experience, who I love, and I love him even more in a setup role. I love him eighth inning. I think that it might fit his personality a little bit better. Diaz seems to me to be cut, and maybe this is hopelessly old-fashioned talking, but Diaz just seems to me to be a closer. Like, he has the mentality, he has the fire, he has this perfect mix of being like super, super intense and also just like really playful and laughing. And it really irritates. Remember how mad Cole Calhoun got at him?
Oh, yeah.
Because Diaz was just up there laughing and having fun. Like, he just stays loose. And I think especially Cole Calhoun, who's like a grinder guy, like, he hated
name
that.
Name sounds like it's cut out of stone.
Yeah, Cole Calhoun. I mean, he almost sounds like he should be like a wrestler or something, right? I don't think I've loved anything more than just Diaz just laughing at it, because he has this mindset and he has this ability and he doesn't get shaken. And I love Cishek, but I really think that just personality-wise, and I'm worried that people have kind of figured his stuff out. And it's a great pace, change of pace. Like, let's say we have Miranda working as long reliever, and then you have C-Sheck for a little while, so you're going from, like, 97 down to, like, high 70s with that funky arm angle, and then you bring in Diaz. I mean, that's killer.
It's brutal.
Maybe you mix Altavilla in there, too, with the high 90. I mean, that is wicked.
That's before you even get to Shea Simmons, who's got his own brand of funkiness that,
yep.
if he's healthy. And Zick.
Yeah.
We could go on.
Well, and Scribner, too, right? Mm-hmm. Scribner is just really seems to have the swing and miss stuff.
And the control, right? Like,
yeah.
just does not give up walks at all.
No. I mean, it's almost like Evan Scribner was created in a lab to satisfy Jerry DePoto, like, right? I mean, he's just perfect, except he has that itty-bitty problem with the homer.
Well, not last year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, not last year.
Not last year.
Yeah, did he give up a single one?
No, he did not. That was the thing. He gave up a sweet... cool 0%. That 100% left on base rate is not bad at all, Evan.
Well, I mean, we're working with a pretty small sample size on that, right? Because he spent
it's a good 14 innings.
Yeah, so he spent a lot of the year hurt, but man, sure. in those 14 innings, was he not just absolutely a pleasure to watch? So,
it was encouraging.
What do you think about is which version of Scribner are we going to get next year?
I think he'll give up a homer. That's my hot take for the evening. It's my Keystone inspired confidence statement. But I mean, everything that you saw from him looked like he was a healthy, solid version of himself. You know, he was striking people out. He was not walking anyone. You know, even in the year where he just had such a terrible time with the A's, he almost literally didn't walk anyone. I think he had a 0.6, you know, walks per nine. Like, that's absurd.
That's nuts.
And so, we keep saying it, every single pitcher on this staff is going to benefit from the massive jump in defense, and someone like Scribner, who just lives in the zone and lives on the edges, is going to find his sort of range of success widened, and his margin for error widened by the existence of Jerrod Dyson and Mitch Haniger in place of Nelson Cruz and Nori Aoki and Seth Smith.
Right, and when you think about like all the different roles in a bullpen and all these different situations that pitchers get thrown into, I think Evan Scribner is like the prime candidate for the clean inning, right? Like you bring him in the seventh inning, mm-hmm. he's not going to walk anyone, and if he gives up a home run, it'll be a solo shot, right? Like,
very true. Yeah,
he's not going to clean up anyone else's mess, but he's going to give you a clean inning, and I think that's really really crucial. It's a crucial role for the bullpen to have.
Well, if we're talking then about people we have acquired from the Oakland A's. Perhaps let us talk about new reliever Mark Zipchinski.
Is that how you pronounce
it? Zipchinski. The R is silent.
Yes.
I've been going Repchinski for a while now, so that is good to know.
Can just call him Scrabble. I mean,
yeah.
I only know this because he just got married, and his. You know how everyone does a wedding hashtag now? His wedding hashtag.
Apparently now, dude.
Okay, well, everyone has a wedding hashtag now. You're very out of date if you don't have a wedding hashtag. That's how people find your wedding on Instagram, duh. Paxton's was...
Which I want.
Paxton's was happily ever Paxton.
Nice. I'm glad that you can recite that offhand.
Duh.
Wow.
And Zepchinski's was "Till Zep do us part,"
which Ooh, is nice.
Yeah, which I think. I mean, it really sucks if you don't have a name that lends itself easily to one of like the three wedding cliches, right?
How did Paxton not go with something like Pax on Earth or like Pax Forever. Like, his name has, like, a word that means peace in it. Like, it should... Oh.
That's his Christmas card, John.
Now I'm upset, I guess. Oh. This is the rest of the podcast for me now.
People were maybe a little underwhelmed by the Zipchinski signing, I would say. I was happy because he was, much like Smiley, was my kind of ideal dream target in the pitching market, in the relief pitching market, and knowing that we needed a lefty and looking at who was available free agent-wise. I like Zipchinski. I feel he's maybe a loogie guy. He might not, don't pitch him against righties, but he can get in there and get the job done.
He's absolutely a solid player, and I'm definitely glad to have him, especially in lieu of what we had last year. I think when we started the season, we had two lefties in the bullpen. I think we had Mimo and we had Vidal Nuno, neither of whom are really traditional loogies. So having Zipchinski is good. The only, I think, real issue I had was the contract.
Right,
but,
2 years.
Yeah. You know, for more than Brett Anderson just signed for as a starter. But in terms of, again, as a player that we have in our bullpen now, he's a good player. Good, and he's very, very reliable.
And I think it's interesting, again, too, just as far as like a window into Jerry's mind, he had this need. He wanted to fill the need. I think they were chasing Cecil, but they weren't going to pay what Cecil commanded. Yeah. Right. So he's like, okay, I got to get the next guy on my list. And if I have to overpay slightly for him, so be it. I want that guy. And you got him.
And it's certainly more, if we think about it if we didn't have him since, we're talking about a pretty solid bullpen that is going to be then relying on either Zach Curtis or James Pazos or
Ariel Miranda,
Paul Fry, you know, one of these extremely unproven guys. So at least having someone to start out there, and injuries happen, you know, people have ineffectiveness. We all thought Joaquin Benoit was going to be a solid lockdown back of the bullpen piece last year, and we saw how that turned out. But at least going in with someone that looks fine is encouraging.
Okay. If we're talking about locks then in the bullpen, so we've talked about Diaz, Cishek, Scribner, Zipchinski. The other probable lock is Nick Vincent. Yeah, who's another...
I love Nick Vincent, I think.
Do you?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's good, but I'm curious what engenders love. I want to know where the love comes from.
I'm happy someone loves Nick Vincent, because there is a lid for every pot, it turns out.
So Jeff Sylvan had this article like a week ago about the most unhittable fastball in baseball. Obviously, Aroldis Chapman, number one. Because he's
Aroldis
a robot.
Chapman,
But Nick Vincent had the second most unhittable fastball in baseball, and that's crazy to me. Like he's a guy who throws in the low 90s. His fastball doesn't have extreme movement on it, but he gets so many whiffs on it. And he got a bit unlucky. His home run rate was pretty elevated last year, but I think he can be a really, really good piece in the back of our bullpen. And we got him for free, right? That's crazy.
Wasn't it also in that article they were saying it wasn't just 2016, like the past couple years? Like it wasn't just a one-time thing?
It's been for, let me pull up the article. Okay. I think it's been like the last 5 years or something like that.
I mean, if you put a gun to my temple and asked me to name who on the Mariners, on the Mariners specifically, in the bullpen, who throws right-handed? If you asked
with a beard,
me, yes. If you asked me all of those things, I would be like, does that weird goatee thing that Diaz has count as a beard? I would never get to Nick Vincent.
Yeah.
So that was an eye opener.
It was unhittable fastballs in the pitch effects era.
Yeah.
You got Aroldis Chapman, then Nick Vincent, Carl Edwards Jr., Darren O'Day, and so on.
What? Sometimes I wonder if Sullivan makes this stuff up to just like fabricates
just to,
it.
Just to check if we're really paying
like
attention.
Like if he's Truman showing us or something. I mean, because that. But anyway, so I felt like I was pretty sure Vincent was ticketed for the bullpen, pretty much a lock. But that article really just reinforced that you know he did have some of the. And I think a lot of his problems, especially with the long ball, were related. I know Ethan did a lot of work with this, related to just overuse, and he's very injury prone, is the one thing about Nick Vincent. I don't think he's had a healthy season ever. I don't think he has ever had a healthy season.
And it's a good thing that we have now Altavilla and Zick and Simmons and Fine and all of these people that any of them would have been useful to have last year, and now we have all of them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, beyond those guys, I think Altavilla is like I have Altavilla penciled into the bullpen. I think there's no way you can. I think you got to see what he has, and if he can continue to produce at this level. Also, Altavilla is a converted starter, and he can give you 2 innings if he has to. He can give you 3 innings. So far, we have Diaz, Cishek, Vincent, Scribner, Zepp. I would pencil in Altavilla. I think it's really hard not to give him a spot. And then potentially, probably Miranda. You've got to have something else that's left-handed in there. And then we've got the pile. We've got Heston and Whalen, whatever goes on with them. We've got Simmons, Fine, Pazos, Curtis, Posey, Cody Martin, good old brave little toaster. And Zick. And we know that Cishek is going to miss some time. We know that Zick is going to miss some time. So that's going to cause them to have to be a little bit flexible. Is there anyone in the pile who particularly, if you had an extra spot to give away to any of these guys, who has kind of captured your heart? Who do you like?
I got to go with Tony Zick. I think he flashed some really brilliant stuff in 2014 and 15, or sorry, in 2015. And it sucks that he's been hurt for so much of his time. And I really hope that he makes it back this year, because I think he could be a really key piece towards the back of the bullpen.
I'm very intrigued by Shea Simmons. It would be a long shot for me to say he's going to be, well, I don't even know if it would be a long shot, but I'm not confident to say that he'll be in the bullpen to start the year, but I very much could see him along with Vieira coming up mid-season and having a really big role once they've sort of proven that they're back, they're healthy, and that they're ready to go, because he has very exciting stuff. He's got really great movement on his pitches, and he's got the type of ability to keep the ball out of the air that you love to see in a late game player, and sort of a inverse version of what you talked about with Scribner, where Scribner's great to start an inning. Simmons you can bring in and he'll shut an inning down, or at least the best version of Simmons.
The healthy version of Simmons, because that's our big question. Well,
exactly.
You mentioned my favorite, who is definitely Mr. Thiago Vieira. If I had to pick one breakout candidate, that is my choice, because he is just, I think, poised to take a huge step forward. He's gotten tremendous amounts of help from Ethan Katz, the pitching coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the article that Divish did about him, I'm really pulling for him, and I think he's in a good place where he's ready to maybe make that jump up. I guess they'll probably start him in AA, do you think, or AAA?
I think they'll start him in AAA unless he has some real struggles in spring training or something looks bad. He's clearly shown it. He's done really well in the Arizona League, and I think...
Yeah, more than well. He set a record in the Arizona League for the most... I think he hit 104 a few times. He did. He hit 104 a few times.
It's just unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, he is large. He's a very large man. And he is hardworking. In fact, I was just looking at an Instagram video that he posted. Vieira is Brazilian, and he does not maybe quite have the resources that, like, a Robbie Cano does. His workout videos are all, like, him on some dusty field throwing at, like, a heavily graffitied wall. So, you know, it's sort of like a... It just makes me like him even more, I think, that he's kind of doing, like, this poor man's version of what the major league guys are doing, you know, with their very expensive iron glens and whatnot.
Working with bronze glen.
bronze glen. No, literally, there's a video. There's a video where there's a guy who's got a like a towel and he's wrapped it around Vieira, and Vieira is just dragging him around this field. I don't know.
Everyone needs a hype man. Everyone needs a towel guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like pulling. The guy's like skiing behind him, basically, appears. But, you know, he's just pure power in the legs. And they've gotten him to add an extra pitch. And I think he could be devastating.
He's definitely the most exciting, I think, for the future for me. I could certainly see him coming up. Late, you know, sort of a la Diaz, mm-hmm. Altavilla later this season, mm-hmm. if that trajectory continues for him. But regardless, I think he's something we should be excited about for the future.
I think there's one other name I want to bring up, and it was someone that Jerry brought up at the media luncheon today. It was Zach Curtis. I think when you think about unheralded players that we've acquired this offseason, mm-hmm. Zach Curtis is right up there, and his strikeout rates in the minor leagues are insane. And I think he just needs a little bit more experience, maybe in AAA, just to get his feet under him. And then I think he could be a real asset as well as a lefty.
Yeah, that's what I love, the lefty aspect of it. Well, let's wrap up with a couple questions that have to do with the bullpen specifically. That we got sent, and then we'll take another break and come back and do some more questions. Brian Nielsen wants to know, can our bullpen be in the top 7 in MLB this year? And that's related to a question we got from Don Varu, where he asked, what is the estimated total bullpen war this year versus last year? And just for context, last year, FanGraphs had us for 3.9 total, which was 15th in MLB. So very squarely middle of the road, despite featuring Yoel Peralta and Joaquin Benoit and recovering Drew Storen and Archimedes Caminero, the wild ride of... Yeah, so what do you think? Can we make it? Can we make a jump to the top 7 or maybe even the top 10? And what do you expect from the bullpen for WAR this year?
That's a really hard question.
Yeah.
Bullpens are just so volatile.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have a pretty confident guess that we'll exceed what we did last year. Whether that's good enough to be top 7 bullpens in the majors, that's quite a jump. And you think about some of the bullpens, even in the American League, like the Yankees and the Indians and the Astros, like those are some really, really good bullpens. We have some really, really intriguing pieces. We've got a lot of potential, but top 7,
that's rough.
I think that's asking a lot.
Yeah, I would be happy if we were like 10, 11, 12.
In baseball, which would be in the top half of the American League,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's too much to ask, considering all the depth that we have. And
last year, 40-year-old Yoel Peralta made 26 appearances, which was more than Felix Hernandez made. So I am not quite sure if our bullpen is going to be top 7, but certainly it's going to be an improvement. There's some really good bullpens, and obviously we have Diaz, but there are a lot of teams that have really locked down people, but they don't need to be top 7. They can if they're in the middle of the pack or they're slightly above, I think we're going to be in good shape.
All right. Well, I think maybe we'll take a little break here, and then we'll come back and answer some of your Twitter questions.
Baby, 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 I'm coming home to your tender, sweet loving. You're my one and only one. The world needs a bitter taste in my mouth, girl. Only one that I want. Wanna be your ride. Wanna be your ride, girl. Wanna be your ride.
We're back. Now's the time on the podcast where we take your questions. Thank you, as always, to those of you who've sent them in. And please continue sending us more. So, first and foremost, and I think this is an interesting link to what we were just talking about, Joe Vieira wants to know, what remaining free agent reliever would you most like to see the Mariners sign? And why is it Charlie Furbush?
I believe Furbush will not pitch this year.
Just to have around. Just as like a, can't we give him
just a buddy, just hanging out.
Can't we give him just a job? Like just talking, a talking job. But I do have a few names I'd like to kick out.
Sure.
Obviously, I think we're going to be looking for a lefty. So Boone Logan is the big, I think he's kind of the remaining prize on the free agent market. His numbers look bad because he's been pitching in cores. But I mean, even at that, he's got like an 11 K9 and a 3-something FIP. I mean, he's solid. He's just going to be really expensive, I think. And we've already laid out a fair amount of money for Zipchinski. But man, would that guy not be loving life coming from Coors to pitch in Safeco? I mean, yeah, okay, bad part, you have to pitch against Mike Trout now. But good part, you'll literally never have to see Coors. Well, except for that one series.
Don't we have a road trip to Coors?
Yeah, I think we have one series against them.
Oh, yeah.
But mostly no Coors. Travis Wood is out there still, too.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Travis Wood, mainly because I just want to see him play in the outfield and then have us switch out. And oh, that would be so
many fun tricks.
Do we get to play the Cubs again? I would like to pull tricks against the Cubs.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
I don't know if we do. I will say I just today was realizing how angry I was that this is the year that we're ending our rivalry with the Padres, apparently. Because what a terrible year to not play the Padres.
Right. Right. Man, that's like gift wins.
We need that better rivalry. Joe Blanton is mildly interesting to me. I really actively dislike him as a player.
Why does everybody hate Joe Blanton? What did Joe Blanton ever do?
He was an A, and he was really good against the Mariners as an A. And then he just he's got a very punchable face.
very important.
Which is entirely his fault, and I hold him responsible for it. So that certainly plays a role. But he does have a skill set that we could certainly use in terms of being able to be a long reliever as well as a starter. And, you know, obviously we have Miranda, we have, you know, Heston and Waylon and all that. But in terms of a proven player who has the ability to step in there, if the price was, you know, not in any way prohibitive, I would like to see him.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest. The price is probably costly on Boone Logan. I think he made $5 million last year, something like that. Travis Wood is probably going to have a little bit of a Cubs inflated price. Maybe you think?
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty poor year last year, though.
He did. Gave up a lot of home runs, walked a lot of people, didn't strike out hardly anyone. Not great, Bob.
Underwhelming UZR. Don't trust your eyes, also. It's just
another name that's out there is J.P. Howell, who is a lefty. with a pretty decent K9, 7.8. This is fine. 2.7 walks per 9. It's fine. 3.5 FIP. It's fine. I mean, I'm not excited about
him.
We
already
him,
have a
but...
player named Fine.
Oh.
It's true. It's true. We may have mentioned.
Here's my dream signing. This is who I would love us to sign. I would love us to sign Aaron Barrett from the Nats, who would not help us as far as, like, players who are potentially have a weird injury history, because he has had TJ. And then while he was rehabbing from TJ, baseball is so mean sometimes, he suffered a freak fracture to his elbow, which set him back, and he had ankle surgery. So whatever. He's had a ton of problems. The Nats tried to demote him to AAA, and he refused it. But he's got great numbers. He's
Yeah, I just pulled up his Fangraphs profile, and it looks nice.
Oh, man.
I like that.
10 K9, 2.21 FIP in 2015. Wipeout slider, mid-90s fastball. I was just really taken by him, and it's looking like the Nats might try to re-sign him, and maybe he doesn't want to come to the American League, and, you know, with free agents, you always have to sell him. But I think... I was surprised that I've not heard anything about him. I guess it's the injuries keeping him off of people's radar, but I'll be very curious about where he goes, because those numbers are nice. Well, let's move on. Speechy McPeachy asks, how likely is it that O'Malley works his way into the starting rotation in 2017?
He's got a bingo chart of positions on the field. Right? he's got to get there at some point.
He's our emergency catcher, I believe.
Oh, nice.
I think my favorite O'Malley story remains that he was warming up because he was going to go pitch in the blowout against the Padres. And then we made, remember? And then it was comeback game.
Man.
He was in the hallway, like, warming up to go out and pitch. And then they mounted that huge comeback. And he had to go out and bat.
That's amazing.
And he had the key hit that I think it either tied us up or it put us ahead. I can't remember.
Romero tied us up. I forget who put us ahead. Hey, what a game, right?
That was a wild one.
Oh, boy.
I don't know that we're ever going to see another one like it. But no, obviously O'Malley is too valuable as our, like, little magical leprechaun who comes out and does some amazing, crazy thing. You can't overuse the magic, though. Save some of that up. All right, so Ben Kasperson wants to know, who's the better Mariner, Seager or Beltre?
That's such a tough question.
That is such a
tough
question.
I love Beltre.
No, it's Seager. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought we were just feeling bad about who was going to break the news. Now I want to hear your guys' outlandish claims.
Exactly.
No, I'm leaning back. Let's hear it. Let's hear it, Jake and Jose.
Explain yourself.
My J friends. Let's go.
Beltre is one of my favorite players. I just wish that he had been a Mariner longer than 5 years. He's a future Hall of Famer. Like, yeah, Seager's gonna have a better career as a Mariner, and yeah, Seager. Well, yeah, he'll just be a Mariner longer, so he's gonna accumulate all those stats with the Mariners. But I just loved Beltre. I think he got the short end of the stick.
And actually, now that I look at the question, I do want to change it, because they're asking
you're leaving Jake on his ship to sink.
No. Because they're asking who's the better Mariner. Yeah. And Beltre's time in Seattle wasn't all that great.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if that's the question that they're asking, then obviously the answer is going to be Seager. But in terms of a player that I really, really, really enjoy watching, in terms of his play and personality especially,
yeah.
I mean, Beltre has my heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's and I think a lot of other people feel that way. But if the question is who is a better Mariner, obviously that answer is Seager.
If you want to interpret it in the who more accurately represents the Seattle Mariners experience, you would bring it right back around to Beltre, because Kyle Seager's sort of been the outlier, right? He's been the prospect that was unheralded that came all the way up and actually worked.
The unicorn.
Adrian Beltre was sort of the hyped, amazing super player that had a very solid time here, but never quite reached that same level of productivity and left to go reignite greatness elsewhere.
All right, moving on. Tillin Jenkins asks, what if the bad pitchers were good? What if we're all going to die? We are all going to die, Dylan, and it won't matter if the pitchers are good or bad. Next question. Ben, oh, I should really learn how to pronounce your name, Ben. Ben Thon? Thon?
Thon.
Is it Thon?
Sure. It's got to be really confident about
I was gonna
it,
say,
and that's what it is.
Sorry. I mean, we'll have to figure out how to pronounce it pretty soon here. Ben wants to know, what does our ideal attending a game day look like as far as, like, transportation and pregame drinks and eats and weather? I mean, obviously, we all love to be at Safeco when the weather is nice because there's probably not any better place on Earth. And also, it creeps me out when the roof is closed. I feel like it gets very steamy in there. Preferred seating, viewing area, post-game drinks and eats. All right, what do you think? What's the perfect Safeco day?
I can speak from actual experiences. If taking a lot of time, I could come up with a very lovely, classy experience that would be a much more pleasant representation of my life, as opposed to what is most likely, which is that we would drive, park sort of next to the railroad tracks where you can get the free parking, several blocks away. You walk to the gas station nearby where they sell a variety of excellent 22s, and then play catch while drinking those in the gravel before walking up to the game. And it's a very sunny day. It's very nice. You're talking with all the other people that are walking by, playing catch with them. It's a good it's a good fun group experience.
I have never...
And it's very cheap.
I have never once had that experience. Never done that. I thought for sure you would say the light rail because...
I was going to say the light rail. I have only done it one time, and it was amazing.
It's
it was
so good.
So nice. We parked up on Capitol Hill, got drinks up there before the game, then took the light rail down to the stadium. Oh, it was perfect. And I would totally recommend it.
That's nice, because Pioneer Square can be a little limited as far as if you want to have nice drinks and eats.
Go to Allstadt.
Yes, Allstadt is very nice. I usually take the C line out of West Seattle and walk through Pioneer Square because I really enjoy that walk. And in West Seattle, there's no light rail nearby. But if I lived near the light rail, I would definitely be doing that all the time because that is easy. At Safeco, it is not a really fun time for me unless I have had some dirty tots somewhere in there. That is my favorite of all the food at Safeco. And obviously some cheap beers in the Pen. And even though the Pen can be a little unpleasant, I actually love to go on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday or, you know, some off day and stand in the Pen and be able to have a little space and be able to see. And the pitchers are a little more chatty then, I think. And they'll come over and kind of talk with you. And I've had some good times laughing it up with Tom. Miss you, Tom. and other than that, I actually like the center field bleachers. I think it's nice to be able to kind of spread out and not be restricted to any one seat, and the view from there is pretty nice. You just can't see the big video board, so.
Sure. I think if I'm going on a budget, I think my preferred seating area is the left field bleachers or the first baseline and the third deck.
Yes.
Especially on an evening night, because you get the huge vista of the skyline and the sunset, and it's just there's no better view in Seattle, and it's amazing.
And you can pay
that
like $10 for
absolutely
it. You pay $10 bucks and you sit there the whole time. It's amazing.
I was there in those exact seats for the Thunderstruck game, and
nice.
It was the most absurd experience. I will forever love those seats. I agree.
Hey, fireworks games are really fun too. Like,
Oh, yeah.
I was always like, meh, fireworks games. But then I went to a couple, and I mean, it's just, it's such a special experience. Oh, man, I can't believe it's January. I'm so sad right now. All right, we got to move on. Whiskey Rick. Will any of our, who is, I've met, and he's a lovely Scottish lad with a nice Scottish accent, so I feel like I should read this in a Scottish accent, except that would be super, I don't have a Scottish accent, probably actually be very, very deeply offensive to him. So, will any of our projected starting five pitch 200 plus innings?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
I agree.
No. Who? All right, okay. Who?
An even split. I think James Paxton.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's.
And
yeah.
I think Felix Hernandez.
Ooh.
I also think Felix Hernandez.
I like it. I mean, I like it. I want to believe it.
The Paxton pick is a bold one.
Yeah.
He pitched one.
That's, I love that. I love it.
He pitched 170 last year, right? Between Tacoma and.
Yep.
And as Jerry is quick to remind us when people are asking questions about his durability.
We're pretty safe in assuming he's going to be the number two starter, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be getting the roles. Yeah. He's going to be getting the rounds in the rotation.
Yep. All right.
He mentioned in the media luncheon today that he is looking to make a significant jump in innings this year. So
nice.
The whole thing is, if he can stay healthy, by all means, go for it.
I love all the iterations of Jerry, but I think Protective Mama Bear Jerry might be my favorite so far. Don't you talk about my pitchers like that. Like, I love, like, defensive, out there slugging away for his guys, Jerry. All right, King Felix SP asks, if you had to be a beer style, what would you be?
Bellingham's got a great selection of beers. My favorite is the Chuckanut Kolsch.
I love that.
Ooh.
And so if I had to be a beer style, it'd be a Kolsch or really any good German beer.
Interesting.
What's that one that has the Franz's Connor? I would want to be Franz's Connor because it's got all the fun banana, clove, nutmeg.
Mm.
So it's like seemingly nice, but it will knock you on your ass. Just very much like me. I am nice until you cross me.
I think I might go with a triple.
Nice. Because, beer.
Yeah, it's sort of a usually a stronger beer, which is what I like. And
as what you are.
Larger human. it's rarely has it been strength so much as just general mass, but it's worked out for me. And, They're a sweeter beer. They're sort of pleasant to drink, which I aim to be in general.
You
so,
are extremely pleasant.
Aww.
All right. Chris K., who you maybe know as I Miss Mutanori, except he's not anymore now. He's Chris from Bothell. He has not a question, but an assertion. There's no reason for a position player to be called in to pitch in a blowout this season. # season of 1,000 pitchers. Do you agree with this?
I vehemently disagree.
Whoa!
I'm concerned.
Why would you deny us the joy of Jesus Sucre pitching for the Seattle Mariners? Or even like Luis Sardinas.
Yeah.
That was gotta have a couple of those out in the season.
Similarly, I don't know if you guys have seen John Boyce's YouTube series, Pretty Good.
Oh, yeah.
But the first one is a video about... a relief pitcher who comes up to bat against Randy Johnson, and he essentially asserts that the entire purpose of baseball in his eyes is to make pitchers hit. and I would extend that to the inverse, which the other purpose of baseball is to make position players pitch, because it is absurd and fun. And
everyone
and
loves
when
it.
When you're in the doldrums of like the middle of August.
Why not?
What is better than watching Jesus Sucre pitch an inning in the middle of a blowout? Like,
exactly.
It's joy.
I mean, I like, as long as we're doing the blowing out, I guess. Like, if we were up 18-4 or something.
I get almost equal joy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's on both sides.
Yeah.
When you're watching a horrible game and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe we're getting beat this badly, sort of the only redeeming joy is being able to see the position player get trotted out. So So
it's
fair.
Like when a bad movie becomes like a comically bad movie, like it like it turns it from something really boring into like watching The Room, like it's sort of the turning point in which okay, now I can laugh at this because it doesn't matter. Yeah. And yeah.
Nothing matters.
That's true.
All right, next question from Josh Cow. Which Garfield High School product is most likely to pitch in the majors? Troop Dog, G-Bronze, or himself, Josh? And I just made up those nicknames. He actually referred to you by your proper names.
Well, I think my sort of ship may have sailed. Certainly, I've still got a little bit of projectability, but I think I peaked with a like very vague offer to play minor league baseball in Australia.
Ooh.
That was, hey. Well, now you say ooh, but for so many reasons, I have a lot of skepticism about the offer. But Josh is young. He's got a lot of projectability. He's lanky. He could be a very whippy player. He has certainly the potential in him. But I am going to say Grant Bronston because no one I have ever met has thrown better batting practice than Grant Bronson, and I think I could see him one day out there at the Home Run Derby pumping him in to some young man. So he's probably the most likely to get in there. Backdoor his way in.
Nice choice. Very clever. All right. So finally, Big Friendly Brian wants to know, Big Friendly Brian's question is not so friendly. What faith do you have in Jerry Dipoto building a starting rotation after 2015's offseason pickups in Miley and Carnes disappointed so much? Tough question. Fair question. What do you think?
It wasn't so much that the process was bad in picking up Miley and Carnes. I mean, we talked, Jake, you mentioned a little bit earlier how it was a little bit frustrating that Carson Smith was sold for what felt like a somewhat uninspired return. But, you know, Wade Miley was a pitcher that should have had a decent enough season, that should have been able to go out there and throw 180 innings. And Carnes was a high risk, high reward kind of guy who everyone saw the potential in him, and some people thought he was worth it and some people thought he wasn't, and that's kind of, you know, it's kind of how you have to make acquisitions. So it wasn't that they were bad choices, they just definitely didn't work out.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we were talking about right at the top of the podcast, right, about process and building a culture in the organization, and if it's true that Miley and Carnes didn't buy into what Jerry was selling, I mean, there's only so much you can do at that point. Like, I agree. I think the process, even heading into the season, I was a huge fan of Miley. I thought he was a great pickup, but sometimes things just don't work out, and that's just the reality of baseball. And
I mean, one of the things about trading for these guys is it's not like a free agent where you can pick up the phone and have a conversation with him. You're kind of just working off of what you've seen and what you've scouted and what people have told you. You can't, I mean, there are tampering rules, right? You can't like directly contact a guy if you are in another right? So, you know, you can't, and it's a little like buying a pig in a poke, and then you get him.
As we all have done.
That's a saying. That's like a genuine, that's a thing people say. A pig in a poke.
What's a poke?
It's like a bag. It's a bag.
Why are you buying a pig in a bag?
I don't know.
Why is a pig in a bag?
I don't know.
This is an inhumane sales operation that you are furnishing.
I mean, the idea is you
have a lot of questions.
You don't know what you've gotten until you open the bag.
Better Business Bureau.
All right. I'm going to look up the history of the saying. It's just 20 minutes me
just on idioms. Just it's idiom hour and a half with
shut up, I would totally do that.
I would too. That would be a great podcast. Let's
really
do
cool.
that.
So Okay, you don't know what you're getting is the upshot of that. Like, you hope that it's what you signed up for, but it also might not be. And I think you don't know that a guy is not going to commit to the defensive shift until you get him out there. And you don't know that a guy is going to have a tantrum about going to the bullpen until you get him out there. And I am a big fan of the good process, even if it yields poor results.
Right.
Because...
Yeah, and with pitching, it's just so... pitching is so unpredictable, right? Like, you're dealing with injuries, you're dealing with... Just, it's the most unnatural motion a human body can make.
Yeah.
So, with pitchers, you're just kind of hoping and praying that they're just going to work out. And for some pitchers, you're more confident that they're going to work out. And for others, you're not. And I agree. The process was there. It was good. It was solid. And I think, we'll just have to see if 2017 is going to reward that process.
Oh, okay. So apparently the pig in a poke is they would,
yes,
they would sell the bag, sold unopened, and then when the buyer, unsuspecting buyer, opened it up to get their delicious suckling pig as dinner, the bag would actually have a cat or a dog, which according to Wikipedia was substantially less valuable as a source of meat.
Thanks, Wikipedia. I thought this was some like Godfather level like con where it was like the horse's head just in the bag. Like, we know what you did.
Well,
just
it's French, so maybe that explains the origin of it. Is French, so take it up with the French.
I will not.
All right. Well, I think that is all the questions that we have this week. Again, we thank those of you who have sent us questions and ask for your questions and also, as always, your name suggestions. Keep those coming. And thank you for sticking with us. We know that these have run a little long, but now I think we have laid down the off-season transactions, the projected lineup, and the rotation in the bullpen. So with that, we should be able to kind of move forward from here. And pretty soon it's going to be real baseball time, and we're going to be talking about real spring training games.
Yes.
So excited.
Yeah. Can't wait.
I think we're down to 19 days from the date we're recording this podcast. I think we're down to 19 days to pitchers and catchers. So by the time you hear this, listener, it will be substantially less. So just hang in there, everybody. Baseball's coming. Thank you very much to Jake and John for joining us tonight. And thank you to you, listener, for listening to us. We will catch you next time on the Lookout Landing Podcast.